Yeah, that's right, Dave Pett. So you can repeat that on the air all the time. I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. Dave Pezzo joining us from the Pezzo Center. Kevin Miller in the Morning Studio. 107.5 FM, 580 AM. Check them out at the Pezzo Center. Pezzo Financial, Pezzo, Pezzo, Pezzo. So let's talk about some of the big stories going on. The women win the soccer match. And now, you're the objective guy in this segment, right?
Yeah.
I'm the guy that you turn into a liberal and... you know,
you turn yourself into that. Yes.
Well, thank you. Thank you. See, already the corrections begin. Once again, proving that I'm going to try to take direction here from Dave Pezzo. So, you know, we're all supposed to celebrate women's soccer and equal pay and everything else. Well, I've got a few issues with them. Actually, I will say I was openly cheering for the Netherlands or the Swedens or the English or everybody else.
Yes, I know.
Well, you know, I was cheering against them.
I am sure that there were lots of people going, no, I don't know that. But you're not alone.
And, you know, someone called in where they were worried about your cough.
I know. And today's going to be worse.
This is the reason why we are so good to our shareholders at the broadcast center. We don't put a humidifier in here. There is something in the studio that makes people cough. I'm glad you're coughing because then people know when I do it, it's just not me.
That's right. It's and vice versa, Kevin.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'll be due for a cough here in a minute. So Dave Pezzo here at KIDO Talk Radio. So we have the women celebrating. Nike making a major blunder. And I don't know if we call this activism capitalism, where they come out with this sneaker. Hey, everybody, we're going to celebrate America. And everybody loves to celebrate America.
Yep.
It's the Betsy Ross flag. Colin Kaepernick says it's racist. They pull the whole thing, and all of a sudden people hate Nike again. The governor of Arizona, while wearing a pair of Nikes, says, we're not giving you any incentives. Go do it somewhere else.
Yeah.
What do you make of that whole, before we get to the women's soccer team, this activism capitalism vibe from a great story, a great Western story out of Beaverton, Oregon?
I'm not happy about it in any way, shape, or form. I think it's a very bad thing. And capitalism needs to be something that stays out of politics, and business rises above that, because you have people that are in both camps, constituencies, if you will, on all kinds of issues. And the idea that we're going to turn Nike into, just go ahead and be your liberal Oregonians that they are. We all know that, and it's accepted, and nobody has a problem. I don't have a problem buying their shoe or somebody else's shoe. But when they start making it a political statement, I do have a problem with it. I just don't think people should do it in business. I don't think it's good for corporations, and I think it always comes back to bite them when they become political activists. And I do think that Nike probably made a good move, or an okay move, with Kaepernick in the first place. I wasn't happy about it either, Kevin. But now doubling down on stupid here says, who's running this company? Is the company running the company? Obvious hate America. Kaepernick runs the company. Who is it? And now we have to make a decision. And I think that they doubled down on it. They got arrogant about the fact that they could sell lots of shoes. And I think they blew it this time.
Well, when they say that the Betsy Ross flag
is racist. It's idiotic. It just says, I'm looking for offenses. I don't like the way you look. You offend me. It's just this constant, everything.
Well, some people say that about me. That's why I'm on the radio. You know, I had a burgeoning career in television until people looked at me and they said, well, send that guy to radio.
That's it.
Send that guy to
radio. Yeah.
But, you know, the point that was made to say that the Betsy Ross flag was racist.
Yeah.
The 13 original colonies.
It's making stuff up. It's continuing this narrative that people in this country are oppressed, and they're not. People are not oppressed in this country. It's the freest country on the face of the earth. But if you go ahead and wake up every day and what you try to do is find what's wrong.
Well, wait a minute now. Sometimes I feel oppressed at the broadcast center.
Well, you are oppressed here.
Thank you.
There's no doubt about that, Kevin.
But you're right. Everybody looking for a grievance.
You'll find it. You know, if there's 100 things right about whatever it is you like, let's say you go to church and there's 100 things you like about the church and there's one thing you don't, what do you think you're going to find? If you're not in the right frame of mind that I like what I like, and generally I like. But if you go in with the frame of mind, I'm looking for what offends me, what I find wrong, you'll find it. And you'll find it in every circumstance. You'll find out why a Betsy Ross flag is not only not patriotic, it's racist. I mean, who would have known that? I'm so glad that Kaepernick could tell me that a Betsy Ross, that the original calling, are racist. Seriously.
Dave Petzo with us, Kevin Miller in the morning, KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM, 580 AM. But building upon this, you have a lot of people, now the Generation Z people,
yeah,
or the millennials. Now we hear the generation after the millennials tend to be a little bit more socially conservative. Let's hope so.
Yeah.
But you have a lot of people going, yeah, Betsy was in on it. She's a bad person. There's a lack of critical thinking in this let's get everything from social media age.
There is. That is a huge problem for our country. There's no doubt about it. The people are all about the whole let everybody do whatever they want. The history is not taught, and throughout the colleges, all they've taught them is liberalism and actually progressivism. And it's frightening. People come out. You ask somebody coming out of college, so what did you learn in college? Nothing. They didn't learn anything. And it's interesting that you really ask college students, not with a So tell me specifically, what is the one thing you learned? But even giving them time to think it through.
Right.
It's shocking how many people come out of college and go, I really didn't learn anything. But when we're looking at, and I think there's lessons in this for all of us, because we've got to pull away from our own social media where we're feeding ourselves only what we already agree with, and then complain about the other side feeding themselves only with what they agree with. We need to open up and have more.
That's why the libs should listen to this show.
They should. They absolutely should.
If they know what's good for them. So let's get to Nike celebrating a fourth Women's World Cup. Okay, here we go. I don't like the U.S. Women's National Team for a lot of reasons. Number one, the way they behave when they won.
Yep.
I mean, rolling on the ground, flashing their derrieres, assaulting people and say, well, when men do it, it's okay. No, it's not okay. The comments that were made about the president of the United States, the bleeping White House. I'm going to prove to everybody right now the hypocrisy of the local media. Imagine if that were President Obama and the women said, we're not going to the bleeping White House. And then their argument for equal pay. Frankly, Fox promoted the heck out of this. It's a dead time in the summer. Mm-hmm. If this were a time where people cared about sports, no one would be watching it. Fox heavily promoted it. It still doesn't draw the equal amount of our average men team, so you're not going to get equal pay. That's pure and simple capitalism, is it not?
It totally is, and it's not. This isn't colleges where the women's badminton team needs to have an equal number of scholarships to the football team, which makes all the money so the badminton team can play. This isn't the same thing. This is now sport. Sport for money. It's big money. It's global, and people are paid enormous salaries because they care to watch somebody dunk a basketball. As soon as the WBA fills stadiums across the country, I'm 100% sure that they will have stars making millions and millions of dollars. Just like the LPGA has only about 20 players or so that are making a great living out there, where you have hundreds of them in the male tour. But all you have to do is pull the cameras back and watch, and you see no spectators at all at the ladies' ones. Nobody would want to sponsor them. People don't go, and people don't go and watch women play basketball with any kind of the same
It's just
audience.
Economics.
It's economics, Kevin, but I don't know why everything has to be, quotes, fair. It's stupid. It isn't fair for women that they have certain things that men don't have. It's absurd. And the idea that we're going to pay equally when you don't have the audience is off the charts dumb. I don't think they have a chance to win this argument.
Well, but then they have people going on and on and on about how it's not fair. Well, life isn't fair, and then we have everybody getting on the bandwagon. Again, when you're representing America, act like you've been there before. Let's face it, back in 92, we had the Dream Team. When they would beat up countries, they didn't hang on the hoops.
Nope.
Michael Jordan didn't do a lot of crazy things. Larry Bird didn't. Magic Johnson. There was a pride associated with being an American. And then you have the win over England. They're mocking it. You don't have to be a sports fan.
No.
To get this, these people are representing our country, but you have a significant amount of people that say, yeah, good for Megan Rapinoe, the pink-haired young lady, saying blank the White House. You've got a Fox guy in a bar, and people are chanting blank Trump, and you think to yourself, you know, this economy is great. I'm sure we're going to get into the markets, but here we have people, you know, openly cheering against the United States of America, against the country, supporting our national team. And I go back to it. If you agree with that, would you agree with they did that to Obama?
Yeah. The fact of the matter is it's beyond hypocritical, Kevin. This goes into everything. Nobody would put up with this. They would say it was so horrifyingly disrespectful and terrible if it was Obama. But it would be the same thing all the way around the world. The idea that we're actually meeting with North Korea, if Obama did it, they'd give him a second Nobel Prize.
When they gave him a Nobel Prize and Obama looked at, even Obama said, well, I didn't do anything.
I know, he didn't. I know, because he didn't do anything. The idea of Obama, and he didn't do anything in his 8 years. The idea of Obama was so overwhelming that people just gushed. It was just ridiculous. I just couldn't. It was really weird to me because it never resonated with me. And so I more objectively looked at it and went, well, what the heck is wrong with people? He hasn't done anything in his whole life. He hasn't done anything.
Right.
And yet everybody's gushing about him because why? Well, you know, he's a good talker. Right. Like we don't have a zillion of those.
All right. Coming up next, we will grill Dave Petzo about Starbucks. Also about Kamala Harris. She's announced a $100 billion plan that will give, quote, black families a real shot at home ownership. How are we going to pay for that? We'll talk to Dave Petzo about those stories and more next. Dave Petzo joining us. Kevin Miller in the morning, KIDO Talk Radio, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. So, what do you say about leadership?
What do you mean, what do I say about leadership? Yeah.
There, you know, there are so many books written about leadership and culture, great coaches and all sorts of things. You know about that at the Petzo Center, but leadership is often written about, but, you know, great leadership. I'm watching this series on Showtime, The Loudest Voice in the Room. It's based on a hit job on Roger Ailes, the departed founder of Fox News.
Yep.
And Roger Ailes and Russell Crowe and everything else, and they focus on the bad things and the saliciousness, but he was so focused.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be a great leader, is that what you need, that monolithic drive where, you know, the opening scene is, I believe in television, I'm about television, and he lived it.
Yeah.
You know, so Nick Saban, Bill Belichick, all these people. You know, on the other hand, we're taught to be well-rounded and stuff. You've lived in both worlds. What do you think about that?
I think it's tough. It's a really hard. Now, you talk about trying to find balance, and that's why I also think there's no There are 100 books right out there right now today, right?
Sure.
On leadership, and there is no single magic thing. But what I find is when you look at the great leaders in general, you will find some common denominators. But what you don't know behind the curtain is what that focus costs. It can cost relationships, and it does. And so finding balance is a very difficult thing for really focused leaders, especially if it requires early on in a business, the way you're talking about Roger Ailes. This is driving Fox from nothing to the number one news network is really something. I mean, that is really something.
And there were a lot of bumps in the road. It, you know, as I'm watching this, and it's a low rated series because it's a hit piece, but he was called up a few times to Mr. Murdoch's office several times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that, you know, it's what makes people great, it seems. Very dysfunctional, but owned it.
Right.
And when those founders of businesses leave, or those folks that have been those iconic leaders, it's tough to follow up.
It is. It's very interesting. The great biographer Isaacson, mm-hmm. you know, I saw him speak recently, and he talked about
it. Was this at the Petzo Center, perhaps one of your getaways with Paul?
We were just hanging on the beach, right. You know, and just, you know, hanging out together. No, yeah. It was at a conference. But anyway,
Steve Ballmer was there, maybe.
Sure, sure. But he talked about Steve Jobs and Ben Franklin and relating all these in history. And it was very interesting to hear him talking about exactly that. Steve Jobs was an incredibly focused person,
yeah.
and very difficult to get along with. That was, again, out of balance. Ben Franklin and others have more balance in his mind. But you think about that. I also think that there's a sincerity of heart that you really believe when you have that magic leadership quality that people want to follow, there is a sincere heart behind it of trying to do something great, something bigger than yourself. And it may not be making an iPhone, but I think in Steve Jobs' case, it was. He wanted to bring something special to the world. It wasn't just about making money. It was also about something special.
Well, you and I both know. Remember when Apple was $8 a share?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I know. Now, that was, Kevin, before they split several times.
Right. And that was Apple was done. And then they kind of brought Jobs back in as an advisor. And before you knew it, he took back his own company. Dave Pezzo joining us. Kevin Miller in the morning. Okay, you're going to love this one. President Trump saying his administration now preparing an executive order on drug prices. Mm-hmm. And it's probably not going to allow the drug makers to raise the prices. He says he plans to lower prescription drug prices by an executive order. I know you're a big fan of the federal government.
Yeah, I am not a fan of that at all. I'm not a fan of people doing that. It's a bad precedent. We all want lower drug prices, but at the same time, drug companies aren't going to keep innovating and creating amazing things and spending $1 billion. I believe that that's the average cost of bringing a drug to market is $1 billion. And yet they're not allowed to make $1 billion of profit when they are one in, what is it, 100 compounds turn out to be anything that makes it all the way. It's a very, very treacherous business, and they do need to have a high profit margin. Is it too high? Of course. Could we do some other things? Yes, but it should be legislative. It shouldn't be by executive order. That just is, in my mind, terribly wrong. I wish he wouldn't do that.
Anything locally going on in the slow time of the year?
It is a slow time of the year. I think we've talked about this, that Micron is doing well in spite of a tough environment with Huawei and the ban there. They announced profits here not too long ago. So again, on a local basis, Micron is doing better than expected. It's not as good as it was a year ago. Chip prices have come down. But the idea that chip prices coming down as much as they have, they're still cash flow positive by billions of dollars per quarter. That's a huge positive.
And finally, a funny story that happened over the holidays. The People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals sending a press release that proves just how slow the news cycle was, both locally and nationally, calling on Mayor Nan Colas of Caldwell to get rid of the name Chicken Dinner Road. Of course, the mayor said he wouldn't do it. It's owned by the county. I don't think the county commissioners will do it, but can you believe Chicken Dinner Road? They wanted to name it to just Chicken Road.
Really? Wow. Again, as we talked earlier, Kevin, about trying to find offenses everywhere you go, this is why we need organizations like this to figure out important things that somehow get by us. It got by me. I've driven by that sign many times, and it's always a smile, isn't it? I live on Chicken Dinner Road, and it's a pretty good-sized road out there in Caldwell. It's quite long. So,
Out there in Caldwell?
Out there. Out there.
You know, one day it will all just be one big megaplex.
It will. Yeah. It will be. It'll just grow together like Chicago. Anyway, I just find that unbelievable that there's not better things to do. There's not better things to do than to find an outrage about a sneaker. That there's not better things to do than not just go ahead and go kick a soccer ball, win, and then act like you are deserve to be a winner, that you are a champion, and you love the United States of America, which gave you all these opportunities. All of these things are just this weird, offensive world we live in where we just can't get away from finding out and figuring out who is offending who and why I should be offended. I assume every day I'm going to wake up and somebody's going to offend me. I assume right now that I'm offending somebody because there are all kinds of human beings out there. But the idea that I'm going to drive off the road and chase a guy down who has cut me off on the road or looks or I don't like the way his bumper sticker looks or he's obviously a gun-toting cowboy, redneck. I hate those kind of people. He must be a racist. He must be just going around and judging everything people do. What a terrible world we live in.
Well, that sounds like a perfect world to me. It sounds like the world's become like talk radio.
Are you the promoter of offense?
Only between 5 and 9.
Only leave it to the rest of the world, but after that.
Right. No free samples after that.
That's right. That's good. That's good.
Dave Pezzo, the Pezzo Center. Thank you, sir.
I'll see you Friday.
Yes, sir. Independence Indoor Shooting. Kevin Miller, KIDO Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. It's Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Pezzo, and joining me this morning is Erica Much.
Good morning.
Morning. What a beautiful day we're going to have today.
I know. It's going to be a scorcher, though.
I know. We were just talking about that when we walked in, and I said, you know, maybe if it stays this hot, we won't have quite so many people joining us.
Keeping people out in their own states.
But what a beautiful year so far, and a beautiful year in the market. My word, we're hitting record highs constantly. The last we looked, the Dow this week ended up over 17% year to date. The S&P is up over 20.
Wow,
those
double
are
digits.
Pretty phenomenal returns when you think about what happened. Everybody's so worried about the economy. We're going into a recession. Everything negative in the world, but the market continues to do well because profits are good.
Yep.
But before we get into a little more on that, I wanted to say, hey, always want phone calls. 580-KIDO. 580-5436. You can also email me at jstone@petsofinancial.net. Obviously, I haven't done the phone number for a while because it didn't roll off my tongue.
We need to do the show more often,
I
guess.
Yes, we do. Yeah, Dave is out enjoying a wonderful long weekend, so we hope he's having a great time and staying cool.
Yeah.
All right. So it's interesting, some of the topics that come up, and I know Dave's been doing a segment all the time on what we've been thinking and what we try to puzzle through all the time at the office and put the pieces together to see how come people think a certain way. One of the things that comes up very frequently is, you know, I finally have some money. I finally saved up. I really want to buy a rental. I kind of wanted to look at the numbers for that because I don't want to get emotional about this, because that's what investment decisions tend to be made from. You know, people have property when they get to a certain level. You save up well enough, you should have something besides just your own home. Do some investing in income producing stuff like rentals. Mm-hmm. It's very common. It's almost like you hit a certain point. It's almost a status to have a rental. But why do we want rentals? Let's look at the numbers. Set aside the whole, it's tangible. You can see it. It's somewhere you can live if something happens in the world. All the negatives that you can come up with, as well as the negatives in the market. Some investments go to zero. Some investments go to the moon. There's all sorts of exceptions to the rule, but I didn't want an exception to the rule. I wanted an average. So we looked at the numbers and I said, you know, I've been working with Dave since 1994, backed it up a little bit further and said, you know, the year I was born, what was the Dow at? And I know we can pick apart the indices and say this isn't a great market to compare to because it's weighted by price. I know it's not the greatest. There's only 30 stock. There's a lot of things you can beat up. But it's also the most widely quoted because it's such a big number. Mm-hmm. I mean, it reached over 27,000 at the close of the market last week. 27,000. So then I said, well, you know, what was it when I was born? So in January of 1973, I actually picked my birthday, which is the 26th. It was just 1,000. 1,003.54 to be exact. Then I said, okay, let's look at Erica's birthday because, you know, she's a little bit younger. And when she was born, it was at 2000, and that was in 1988. So 15 years later, the market doubled.
Yeah.
Okay. A little bit lower than usual because we always talk about doubling in 10 and blah, blah, blah. But it's interesting when you look at that and you say, in such a short period of time, we've had a pretty good market return. So what was the median house price nationwide? Not you, Boise, but we went nationwide. So in January, because you can actually pull these numbers off the internet. It's pretty cool. You can find anything you want there, right? So in January of 73, the average home price was $29,900, $30,000.
First of all, that's crazy to think about.
Isn't it?
$30,000, that's it for a house. Wow. Yeah.
So it's amazing when you think about those numbers, too. So
oh,
we
yeah.
went up to average here in Boise. We looked at it, was 333.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So nationwide was 308. So real close. So we'll just use the national numbers just to try to make the point that we're trying to hear. Up 930%. Not bad return.
Right.
Plus you received income. Plus you got all the positive things with it. I know there's negatives too. Upkeep, expenses, property tax, bad tenants, whatever you want to look at. But what we're saying is pure numbers. 29,000 grew to 308. And you received the income. Or if you were making payments, people sometimes say, someone else paid the house off for me and then I received the income. It's great. But we're going to say you had 29,000 and you paid cash for that house. So let's take the same 29,000 and let's put it in the Dow. So we can run these illustrations. You can't buy directly into an indice. I understand that. But you can do hypotheticals if that money would have been in there. Did not reinvest the dividends, because if you're taking the income from your property, you would be taking the income from your investment. Mm-hmm. We're trying to keep it very fair here. the Dow would have grown to, from 29,000, January of 73, to over $727,000.
That's insane.
And you would have received income all those years. So when I look at this and I say, why isn't it when people get a big sum of money or they've gotten to a certain point, don't they get excited and say, not, I don't want to own a real estate property. I want to own more in the stock market. There's no upkeep. There's nothing to do. It's very easy.
Yeah. Like Dave always says, you can't shovel the sidewalk when there's snow. They won't let you.
No. And you don't have to plunge a toilet when it backs up at midnight. All these negative things that you have from rentals. Plus, take the emotion out of it. I'm just looking at the numbers. See, and the interesting thing is, 15 years later, the average home price in the year Erica was born was $111,000. Yeah, it went up quite a bit.
Right.
Actually went up percentage-wise probably more at that point than the Dow did. Or real close.
Yeah,
29
exactly.
Went to 111, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a short period of time, there you go. But we're looking more longer term because then what would a normal house be worth today? 111 grew to 308. Not that great of a return.
Right.
We're talking 176%.
Mm-hmm.
Not terrible.
Right.
But we took that 111 instead, did the same thing. Put it in a hypothetical with the Dow. That 111, taking all the income out, would have grown as of May 30th. I didn't even take, by the way, into this June, which was so good. This is ending
a good
in
month.
May.
Yeah.
Okay. That shows that it would have grown to about 1.3 million.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then how can you argue, you know, the rental side when you see the actual numbers, the facts?
Yes.
It's so hard to just say, you know, my rental did really well. Yes, you got that income. You know, you had, you were able to drive by and see that piece of property. But if you just look at the numbers, it's mind blowing. It's crazy.
And it's very easy.
Yep.
All right. We're going to go to the phones real quick. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Morning, Jennifer. How are you doing?
We are great today.
Did you bury Tom someplace?
We did. We thought it was time. He needed to go for a little while. No, he's actually visiting his daughter. They went. She's doing an internship in Yellowstone or working this summer, so they went to see her.
How nice.
Yeah.
Would you like to know my philosophy on the, real estate investments?
Of course.
Well, for one thing, I don't know anything about it, and it's like you mentioned all the drawbacks, all the problems and this, that, and the other. And my basic philosophy is that land, as in Gone with the Wind, when Gerald O'Hara says to Scarlett, land is the only thing that matters. Well, anyway, there's only so much land, and prices are going up, you know. It wouldn't make me feel good making money because somebody else can't afford a house, you know, or a rental.
Good point.
So, you know, I don't know. I got my little piece of the planet, so to speak, my little house. And everybody right now, everybody and their mother is trying to buy it from me, you know. So anyway, that's my thing. Like you say, you just invest in stocks and companies and the economy, and you don't have to do anything. And there's no reason in the world I would want to invest in more than my little house.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yep.
It is.
So.
Good deal. So you've never done a rental before, huh?
Nope. Yeah. I do have a friend who's got several houses. And this guy is, well, he's got three businesses also. Video, sheepskin, and poster distribution. He is something else. And he can take care of his properties. I mean, he's done plumbing. He's installed sprinklers. He does all this stuff. He deals with the tenants, and he's able to do it. I don't know how he's able to do it, but he seems to fairly like it.
And, you know, and some people, it's a great thing for them, but then we also want to point out, too, that it's a second job. It's not, if you have a job like he's running those other businesses as well as doing the rentals, there comes a point that gets fairly exhausting because you have all these, and I get that people make more money if they do all the work themselves, take care of the tenants, but you have to realize you're doing that work, so it's another job for you too.
Yeah, and the idea of somebody paying the rent, theoretically paying off your mortgage, to me that's not that much of a selling point compared to all the drawbacks, you know.
Oh, we're with you.
Yeah.
Anyway, you all take care, and anyway, I'm doing what I like to do, and I've been into accounting and in statistics. Whenever I get my monthly statement, I go through every stock, and I calculate all the percentages, and I'm doing the accumulative appreciation and all sorts of stuff. I just love figures.
Yeah,
it gives me something to do.
You know, we laugh and say that we're number geeks here too, yeah, because we run a lot of numbers just to prove that what we're saying backs up with the data. Because we can feel a certain way. I don't want a rental because I don't want the extra work. I'm busy enough with what I do that I don't want to have a second job. But we want to make sure that the numbers don't contradict what we're feeling, because yeah, we can be overwhelmed. I mean, everybody has their emotional pull certain directions, so we want to make sure the facts backed up our feelings as well.
Well, you know, as Dave knows, I just crawled out of a cave. I have very little technological whatever, and I do all my statistics by pen and pencil. Yeah, I keep my computer at the library whenever I need to use it.
Oh, really? That's
and
great.
So I do everything by hand, uh-huh, you know.
That's not bad. That's a lost art, actually.
It is.
Well, you know, speaking of lost art, I had this cousin, and sadly, she died back in 2014 of ovarian cancer.
Oh.
She was about 3 months older than me. She would have been about 73 or 74. We used to correspond considerably. I like to type, you know,
mm-hmm,
and she would write me longhand, they call it cursive, I guess, longhand letters. I've got hundreds of longhand letters written by her. It's amazing.
I bet her handwriting was beautiful, too.
It was.
Again, like you said, that is a lost, mm-hmm, art. I don't write well. My children haven't learned that. It's something that people used to practice, and we don't do it anymore. It's kind of sad.
No. But anyway, well, you all take care and hope you get a lot of calls.
Thanks, Jim. You have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We're going to take our first break, and we come back. We have what we've been puzzling or thinking through at the office. Thanks. Good morning, and welcome to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Mutch filling in for Dave Pezzo this morning. We'd love your phone calls, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Beginning of the hour, we were talking about rentals and why people seem to like them. And we do understand the tangibility. We do. We understand why people feel that it's important to have something that may not be tied to the market. But you need to understand, too, there's so many different types of investments. Buying into the market doesn't mean you're just buying Apple and Google and Amazon. There are real estate investments there, too. So you can still get the diversity without having the tangible property, even though that's what makes people comfortable. But we're not trying to beat up rentals. Of course, we're just trying to show you the data of why you really, really need to start investing. That leads to what we've been thinking about. We spent a lot of time around the office saying, how do we get people to start saving and taking care of their futures and actually investing, not just saving? Because mm-hmm, statistics show the millennials are good savers, but not great investors. And it's different because investing, you're actually buying into the market and you're doing stuff that actually has a potential for higher growth, but also can go down temporarily.
Yeah, that concept, I think, is hard to understand sometimes, especially if you're not in the financial industry, mm-hmm, or you haven't had any kind of classes on background. It's kind of difficult to understand, okay, I'm taking this, whatever it is, $100 a month, putting it into the stock market, and it can drop to $93 or, you know, $50, whatever it might be. But if you're not selling, you're not locking in that loss. Mm-hmm. And that can be a tough concept. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're seeing your account balance go down, and you don't know where did that money go? But if you're not selling and you have the time to recoup, it's a whole different game.
It is. And what is the stock market? Somebody tells me I need to buy into the stock market, but I can't. You just said I can't do that. How do I do this? Well, when you look at buying into an investment, and it's so cheap now, it's so easy to do, it's so easy to get started. Almost every company that allows you to use their platform wants you to invest, mm-hmm, or they wouldn't incentivize you by giving you time to trade with no cost. Or $5.95 trade, $6.90, whatever it might be. Everything is pushing you to do this. The costs have come down. You can work with an advisor. You can do it online. There's so many ways to get investing, but it's still so foreign because no one understands what the market is made of. So when you break it down, you say, what is the market? Well, the market is the best companies in America. So when you say my investment could go to zero, what would that look like for the global economy? Because it is tied together. So if the U.S. economy would have to be worthless for every company inside of the stock market or the mutual fund that you own to go down.
Mm-hmm. And I think we'd have some bigger problems if that happens.
Yes. And again, I shouldn't say go down, but go to zero.
Yes.
Everything will
yep.
go down temporarily. But if you owned a business and I walked in and said, you know what, I'm going to look at your business. I think it's worth half what you think it's worth. But you have the financials to say different. Would you sell your business?
I wouldn't.
Just give it a chance. Give this a chance. So we want to break this down and say, why don't people invest? Why don't they put their money into something that, as we just showed you, so easy to do? Why would they rather go buy property or rentals and not put it in the market? Well, I don't really think people are irresponsible. I don't think they sit around as a family and say, I want my kids to struggle and figure it out on their own. Some do, and that's okay. That's a philosophy, and I'm not even judging that. I'm just saying the majority of people don't say, I have no desire to help my children through college. I want to work until I'm 90. I don't want to take care of myself through retirement. I've never had anybody tell us that. Everybody comes in and says, how do I plan for retirement? How do I plan to send my kids to college? Well, you got to get started. That's the biggest thing. But then how do you get started with the weight of everything that you're dealing with as a young person going into the real world? I mean, you graduate college, and as we know, student loan debt's through, it's crazy how high it is. And then you can't get a good job unless you have a college education. So everything starts to compound on itself. So if your parents weren't able to set aside money to pay for you to go to college, you want to get a better job, you want to make more, so you go and take out a student loan. The average private school student that goes into a private education comes out with $35,000 in debt. Public institutions, slightly less. And then the for-profit colleges, they're higher. And 88% of people that go to for-profit schools actually come out with debt. 88%.
Yeah, that's a high number. And it's hard. I mean, like you said, when we're talking about what's going on, how do people get started? Why aren't people investing? It's not just the lack of education or knowing. It's how do you get started in life? I mean, like you just said, you walk out of school with debt. And then maybe you're trying to land a job, and then you need a place to live, and all these expenses just add up so fast. I mean, the buying a house is interesting, especially right now in the market, just with what's going on in the growth in Boise in general too. It's crazy. How does someone buy a what now starter home
considered $330,000?
Exactly. How do you do that? Mm-hmm. How do you make that work? Well, most people don't have that money saved up. And so how do you make that down payment? And that's, you know, kind of what we were trying to puzzle through is get that information. How do people make this work?
Mm-hmm. And when you get done with college, what if that career choice that you made doesn't produce the income that you hoped it would? And now you're not living with roommates because you want to go off on your own and figure life out. The average rent in Boise, it's gone crazy too.
Yeah.
Even rental prices are expensive. So if you have to pay $1,500 or $1,000 for rent and you don't have a roommate, it's a big chunk from your budget. The average college graduate starts at about $50,000 a year of income.
Mm-hmm.
$50,000 sounds like a good income to start, better than if you didn't have the education. So we're not against education.
Yeah, yeah.
Please understand. We're just trying to figure out how do you do everything you want to do and still invest. Then the next thing is you come out of college. Now you're paying rent and you meet the love of your life and you decide to get married. Did you realize the average wedding cost $34,000 now? $34,000.
And where does that come from?
Yeah, who's going to pay for that?
Yeah, if mom and dad aren't helping, that's on you. And you have $30,000 of student loan debt, and then you have wedding. And then we forgot to talk about, well, how are we going to get a car?
Yeah, because you have to get to your new job.
Your new job, you need something reliable.
Yes.
And what the average price of a new car is about $34,000.
Everything seems to be $30,000, right?
In that $30,000 range. But yeah, it's just all these expenses and it's crazy.
It really is. All right, we're going to take a call real quick. Good morning, Pro-Life. How are you?
Very good. You know, you were talking about we all would like to be wealthy, but there are certain kinds of wealth that's more important than financial wealth, and that would be our health.
Absolutely.
And I'm an organic farmer, and there's a reason I'm an organic farmer, because it's healthier to eat organically. And I believe that as we go into the future, people are going to find out that a lot of the former farmlands in the United States are heavily chemically polluted, and they won't want to grow crops there. There's a reservoir down in the west side of the Central Valley called Kesterson Reservoir. That drains its drainage water from the Central Valley, and water from that used to be able to be taken and used for agriculture. Now the California Department of Agriculture says Kesterson Reservoir water is so polluted that you can't grow crops with it anymore.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, it is. And so We're headed into a time when people are going to realize that chemical pollution of water and soil and air is really pretty unhealthy. And so I believe that good soil and water will be, you know, farmland will be the most valuable kind of thing you can find.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Got to be able to grow good food for sure.
Right. And so what good is it if we have all the money in the world, but we don't have health? That doesn't make any sense. And so,
you know, I think it's interesting too, though. I just watching as we meet with more people, more clients, because we meet with all people a lot.
Yeah.
They're healthy. I mean, people are living longer. An 80-year-old is not anything near what they were 15 years ago. So health seems to be improving. People are more aware of what they're putting in their bodies. Like you say, I mean, an organic farmer, they're more aware of those things. So I'm hopeful it's maybe the other way, that people become more aware and start cleaning it up even more.
Yeah. And what that might mean is that alternative, like herbal medicines, will prosper in a stock market kind of a way over pharmaceuticals. I believe that's going to happen. It's not really happened yet, but I think we'll
I think it's
see
getting
that.
There. I think it is. All right, you hear the music. Sorry, we do need to take the break at the top of the hour. Thanks for the call.
Goodbye.
All right, and please give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning, and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Much filling in for Dave Pezzo this morning. Please give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Before we go back into our topic, we're going to go right to the phones. Good morning, Dean. How are you? All right. Well, we'll go ahead and go back to Jim real quick. And then, Dean, if you're there, we'll come back to you, okay? Good morning, Jim.
Hello, Jennifer and Erica.
Hello.
Good
long
morning.
Time.
Long time no talk.
Absolutely.
Did you guys, by any chance, pick up on the faux pas of Fox News just now?
I don't believe so.
Well, listen, it even ties in with real estate. Well, they came out, we're talking about the hurricane in Louisiana, and that most of the houses were up on stilts. Well, the next news item was the House, in, as in Congress. So they were talking about Congress, and then they went to a news clip talking about houses in Louisiana up on stilts. I thought it was hilarious.
That is good. That is, you don't want to buy those as rentals either, right?
Right. Well, yeah, true. Well, when you build a city that's under
sea level, you know, absolutely.
Sea level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hint, hint, what problem are you going to have there?
You're going to have some flooding, of course.
Right. Anyway, yeah. I just thought I'd point out that cute little thing I picked up
that
on.
That is good. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Dean?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, we have you. How are you? Sorry about that. We didn't mean to lose you there.
Oh, I don't think it was your fault. I think I'm as technically challenged as old Jimbo there.
What can we help you with?
Hey, I just wanted to thank you for running those numbers on the market versus rentals. I had dozens of rentals for 25 years, and I'm not saying they didn't do me okay, but it was a lot of work.
It is, isn't it?
And I seen some friends the other day that were they just bought them an $80,000 place, and they were going to flip it for $160,000 or turn it into a rental or whatever. But they spend the $80,000. They do a lot of work with the family. They put money into it, and in the end, it's, you know, it's a job. You know, you just don't make it like nothing. And so I'm just happy to hear the numbers are so good by just leaving into the mutual funds, and there's no headaches.
Exactly.
And rentals get tougher every year to manage. Now, mind you, mine were all low end, but I hear the same stories about people that have really nice stuff too. So,
yeah, it's I don't think people take care of someone else's property as well as their own either. So they'll let things go that you wouldn't let go in your own home. We heard of like a slow leak in the bathroom that turns into a disaster. Even things that aren't deliberate, they just don't pay as close of attention.
Oh yeah, well, they don't. I hear people tell me stories of, you know, horror stories of you know, like changing their lawnmower oil in the on your front carpet there,
oh, geez.
And things like that. And I mean, they do. They don't care, and not all of them. You can't lump everybody, yeah. But it just to me, it I would never go back into it. You know, especially at my age, but. If you can invest your money in the market and make just as much or more, If you'd run those numbers again whenever you get a chance, I'd like to rehear them, too, because they sounded great.
Absolutely. And the thing that if we can just turn off the hard part again, we always talk about the emotional side of it, but people see that temporary price decrease. And as you know, you can't price your homes all the time or sell them immediately. The hard part about the market is you can. And people tend to destroy their returns because they get nervous and they'll, oh, I know we're going to have a recession. I know the market's not going to do well here. And they sell out and they miss it. That's the hard part. If people could be as patient with their investing as they are with owning rentals and putting up with what they put up with rentals, it's much easier to put up with them, what the market does, but they just get so nervous that it will not come back. Even though historically speaking, the numbers, when we say the Dow at 1,000 in 1973, when I was born and it tipped over 27,000, that's pretty phenomenal return if you just don't touch it.
Right. I've got a nephew that works for me, and I made him start as soon as he was 18 because he's too smart to finish school. And I said, okay, you're going to get in the market. You got to get in it right now. And that kid now is, you know, he's not even four, and he's ahead of 90% of the world as far as money saved. And he told me he made, I think, $4,000 last month. Not money, that's an unusual month, but that's more than he makes working. And at 23 years old, that's pretty, really good. So, the market's an incredible thing if you can just talk people into it. But when there's a match and people won't take it,
it's mind-boggling.
My mind. Yep. And I think it's, I don't know if it's Ramsey or Pitts, but they're both pretty high in my book. They say fear is what sells. You got somebody out there selling fear. Oh, the market's going to drop. Well, I always text my nephew whenever it drops. I say it's on sale.
Exactly.
You're a good uncle.
It's spitting money at us.
Yes,
and
that's great.
And so he bought in and he's doing well. So, yeah, I'm a big believer in the market. And I just want to thank you for running those numbers and putting them out there.
Thank you. And thank you for educating your nephew. Because, see, he'll talk to other people as well. See, it works for him and then it starts to spread. So hopefully his friend group will start doing what he's doing and we can start educating people to understand investing works. Just give it a chance.
I hope so.
Yep. Great job. Thank you for the call.
Hey. All right, Jennifer. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. All right. So that was a great call. See, we love to hear from people that have actually experienced something and can share and add to the topic. So if you have an experience that you'd like to share, good, bad, if you have something that contradicts what we're saying, I'd love to talk to you as well. So give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. All right. So let's go back to the numbers that we're talking about when you start out in life and you're now out on your own. So I believe we were starting to talk about now you met the love of your life, you're planning that wedding, and now you need to come up with $35,000 just to do an average wedding. And of course, you can't not have a honeymoon.
Right.
And the average honeymoon now is $4,500 to $10,000 on top of the wedding. So those are additional costs. So if you both have student loans, you're up to about $160,000 there, and then you add another $30,000 for your wedding. You're almost at $100,000 in debt before you buy a home. Oh, but then the car. So you see how it starts to add up. Then you decide you're going to have a child. What was the average child care cost in Idaho? Do you remember?
Was it $4,500?
I think it was like $8,000 a year.
Yeah.
And $1,000 per month is the average nationwide.
Right. And we thought those costs were a little bit low just from the people that we've talked to recently. Mm-hmm. And if you have multiple children, then it's even more expensive.
Yeah. So then you start to add in all these costs and you wonder, is it because people are irresponsible or they don't have any room? But then it goes back to, it doesn't take a lot to get started. What if you just put in $25 a month? What if you put in $50 a month? What if you just did your 401k and got that match? Because you realize if they match 3% and you put in 3, that's 100% return on your money.
How can you can't not do that.
You have to do that.
But the other side of it is there's no, even if you don't have a match, you still have to put in. I mean, you're saving money for you.
Yeah, that's not a reason. Because when you look at what used to be, there were pensions or what they call defined benefit plans. Most people had that. So you got a stated amount of income when you retired. Now you have the freedom to save as much as you want. You did then as well. But then you have to decide how much to put away to get the income that you need. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to go to the phones again. Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good, good.
So you're listening to you guys, you know, I've got 401k at work and I've got a few other things, but how do you get started like in investing in stocks and like you say, buying into the stock market and that kind of stuff?
Yep. It's actually pretty easy. So there's a couple different ways you can do things. You can start by, you know, just going to a TD Ameritrade and opening a retail account on your own, and you can set up automatic contributions. You know, from your bank account, you can just have an auto deduction. You can go and work with a financial advisor. They can help set you up and get you started with maybe an individual fund company like American Funds or Franklin Templeton. But really, you can Google or go online and you can find multiple options to just get you started. It's very easy.
Are you on the research side of it, what we would suggest too? Because a lot of these people actually, Vanguard, TD Ameritrade, Schwab, they give you research as well. So you can go in and actually look at the different, and I would, if it were me starting out, I would start with like an index fund of some kind, like a S&P 500 or something that just gives you a toe in so you can see how that works. And then if you want to start buying individual securities, you can as well. But the hard part about individual securities is you really need to pay really, really close attention to make sure that you're, you know, if it did really well, that you trim. You see, those kind of things, it takes a little more maintenance. So it depends on how much work you want to do.
Yeah, and knowing when to, you know, you like saying buy and sell and, and do those kind of things, and then knowing how to do that and when to do that. I mean, that's, you just got to find somebody, I guess, that does that and helps you out, I guess.
Yeah, you do on that type if you want to be a stock picker. Yeah. But, you know, that's more on the trading side. We like to invest. We like to be investors for the long term. Personally, I have a portfolio that I built for myself, and it's mostly in mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, a few stocks here or there. But you know what? When I want international exposure or I want small cap or I want something that takes a little more maintenance or management, I'd hire the experts. That's what mutual funds do. Active side, you're actually hiring a money manager that goes and picks the investments for you. And I think it's worth it to do that.
Okay.
And you can start with, seriously, a lot of the funds take $25, $50 a month. It's very, very easy to get started.
You said like Ameritrade or?
Yep, you can do those. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
You bet. And I hope you get started soon. It's fun to do. It is. It takes a lot of work to get going just because you got to get comfortable with it, but it's really easy once you do.
All right,
Patrick.
Your time.
Thanks, you bet. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. Thanks. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're continuing to work through all the different ways of starting and why people aren't, and hopefully give you some advice and guidance and go on the positive side, because right now we're all negative telling you how people can't get started. We're going to show you how you can do this. All right. So give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone. Erica Mutch and I are filling in today for Dave Pezzo. Well, he gets a nice, long, well-deserved break this weekend. You know, I wanted to touch on one more thing before we get back into getting, you know, how come people may not be investing. And it was back to Patrick. You know, I started working with Dave a little over 24 years ago, and we've always made it a point that we will work with anyone. We want people to get started investing. So if you're not comfortable out there on your own, give us a call. We'll give you some good guidance. We'll help set things up for you. It's just something that we feel so strongly about getting people started that we really, really will help anyone get started if you're wanting to. So just give our office a call and we'll be glad to do that too. All right. So again, phone calls here, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. This has been a fun hour, I think.
It has. We've had a lot of great calls.
We have. It's been very interesting to hear different perspectives. So again, we welcome the calls. It's very fun to hear other opinions as well. Some of the reasons I'm wondering again, and again, as we sit here, we start to think about and wonder, is social media affecting people's desire to invest and save as well? Is it so much now about keeping up with not only your neighbors down the street? You could see the people that got a new car when you were a kid, or your friends bought a motorcycle or whatever happened and you thought, boy, I'd really like to have that. Now it's keeping up with everyone everywhere. Do you think maybe that changes things and people feel it's more important to spend everything and live for today? Or do you think budgets are just so tight that they don't have wiggle room?
I kind of think it's a mix of both, because the media, like you said, you have your phone in front of you constantly. You can click on that Facebook app anytime and just scroll through, and you see wonderful vacations, people's weddings. I mean, just experiences in general. So it is a lot of not only keeping up with the Joneses, but everyone. Yeah. It's expensive, and it gets those thoughts in your mind. Well, if they're doing it, well, then I should be doing it too. Mm-hmm. Well, what if you don't have the money or the budget to do that? Do you just put it on a credit card? Do you just somehow make it work? Or maybe, you know, say, well, I'm not going to invest right now. I'm going to choose to go to Mexico or something else. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, the media and the
and how it
ease.
Affects almost mm-hmm. everything.
Mm-hmm.
And with kids too. I mean, we're as guilty as anyone else about wanting to provide everything that our kids could possibly dream of in their lives when you're growing up. That's part of what you want to do as a parent. But do we go over the top? Do they need to have a brand new car when they turn 16 that they're just going to wreck anyways? Do they need all these things, or is it because we want them to have it? Because I don't know that kids really, they got a car, they're happy.
Yeah.
I remember my first car, it was not great. So when you think back on what we had, but then you so appreciate when you work hard and you're able to save and buy one for the first time. It's a great feeling. But if you start with getting everything you could possibly imagine brand new, how do you come down from that? How do you sacrifice? How do you cut back? How do you start to not have to have the best fairy tale wedding, the brand new of everything, the best honeymoon, so that you're competing with everyone else out there to say, look what we did versus what do you want? Because we looked and ran. Again, numbers are fun and we are number geeks. So we said, what if you took that $30,000? What if your parents said, here's $30,000, have a wonderful wedding, or take it and invest it? You have a choice. Do whatever you want with it. Here's the money. Put that $30,000 in the S&P 500 back in 1974. 40 years later, 45 to be exact.
And not adding anything else,
not
right?
adding anything to it, just reinvesting the dividends and letting it work within itself. That $30,000 in 45 years would have grown to $3.8
million. Wow.
Sometimes we look at these numbers and we rerun them a couple times, because even though we do this all the time and we know what compounding is very well, we know it clearly, the last doubles are the most important. We get all that. It's like ingrained in our brain. We still sometimes look at these numbers and think, what if you had a $10,000 wedding and invested 20? Mm-hmm. Still be pretty cool. I mean, a $10,000 wedding probably is still pretty nice, and invest 20. You wouldn't have 3.8, but you'd have a lot of money.
Right.
So that's when we say it's not unachievable. There's so many ways that you can put money aside and do well. Putting $50 a month. The illustration that Erica and Dave ran together, we talk about the coffee illustration all the time. And I know everyone says, give up your latte, give up this, and make these little small sacrifices, and it will add up. But if you think about $150 a month over 40 years, first, you spent $72,000 on coffee, but that would have grown to $1.2 million.
That's huge. I mean, do you really like coffee that much first to spend $72,000
mm-hmm.
and then $150 a month? I mean, maybe you don't like coffee. Maybe it's something else. Maybe there's video games or going out to eat or something that you can just stop once a month even and putting that away for $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm. And that will make a major difference in your ability to retire when you want, because people are retiring younger and living way longer now
mm-hmm.
with less money. How do you make those numbers work? There's no magic formula. The magic formula was when you get your first job, you put away 10%. That's the magic number. That's where it starts. Or $50 a month or $150, whatever you can do. Because we're going to come back and look at some of the numbers here of how much difference time makes. Even if you say, I can't afford to put $50 or $100 away now, but you know what? In 10 years, I think my budget will be better and I'll free up that money and I'll put away twice as much. So instead of putting away 50, I'll put away 100. We really want to run those numbers and see what time does to that money. It's all about time in the market, not timing,
right.
but time in the market and how well it will do for you. So what we've talked a lot about, the negatives, the spending, everything that it costs, because it does, it costs a lot of money to live today. We look at budgets sometimes and say the average cell phone bill is over $100. Internet, because you got to watch TV that no one watches, is $200. And people say, I just don't have any wiggle room. But do you watch TV? No, not really. But you're willing to pay $200. Won't put $50 away, but you'll pay $200 a month for TV. So part of it is just making small changes. everybody's going to want to live. We all here are living for today, having fun. You don't want to work hard and not have any sort of relaxation. I get all that. But we're not saying you have to sacrifice everything in your life. Just do the small things. Mm-hmm. Set aside a little bit.
Or just make choices. I mean, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be this huge, extravagant vacation. You could do something a little bit less and still have money to save.
Yeah. If the average person spends $1,000 a person on vacation every year, you find ways to do this. What if you spent $800 a year mm-hmm. instead of $1,000 mm-hmm. and you put that extra $200 away? I mean, there's so many small things you can do that will change your life, because most people don't say, I want my kids to not have a good education. Most want your kids to be more successful than you were. So how do you do that? What path do you help them with? Well, budgeting, not spending everything, that's a gift to show kids that there is a little bit of a struggle. It's hard to do everything we want to do. How are we going to make this work? That makes them be more responsible as well. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go back into some of the dollar compounding money, how it works. It's going to blow your mind. It really, truly will. Kind of like 33rd growing to 3.8 million.
Yeah, that blows my mind.
But these other numbers will as well. So please give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Mutch filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Thank you for the wonderful calls. It's been a great morning. So anybody else has questions or comments, please do call 580-KIDO, 580-5436. So we've been talking about the numbers and what we've ran on putting in small dollar amounts and what it will do and how impactful. But before we get there, let's see what we're trying to fix. All right. The median net worth of U.S. families. Okay. Remember, families. That's usually considered like people, four members in the household. At each of these ages, this is, again, mind-boggling to me. At 75 years plus, it's $264,000. That seems like a lot, but how do you live on that and draw income if they say on average you can take 4%? That's not a lot of income. So how do we change this? How do we get started? How do we make this better? So if at 65, we're looking at about 200,000 net worth, how do we make that better? Well, you can do it very easily.
You really, what it is time. You need to get started as early as you can. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you're not 19, 18, like Dean's nephew, it's okay. Just start when you can. But if you put away that $50 a month, let's say at your age 20, you started at age 20, average retirement around 65, so 45 years in the future. If you were to just put away that $50 a month, let's go back to Jennifer's birth year, 1974, and if it you just left it alone, you put that $50 a month in and just didn't touch it, didn't buy or sell, just left it alone, it would be worth $673,000 without doing anything. And that's just $50 a month. So if you can do $75 a month, $100 a month, just think about that exponential growth that you would have 45 years down the road from just putting that away, just not touching it.
And we're not even saying invest it in a phenomenal fund. This is just the S&P 500.
Right.
So you can pick, mutual funds have performed better, believe me, but that's not what we're concerned about. What we're saying is just getting it into something. But here's the thing that blows my mind. First of all, $50 a month for 45 years, you'll have $670,000 potentially. Could be more. Depends on the market conditions or less. These are just hypotheticals. But let's chop off the first 10 years. Okay, so you couldn't afford to invest from age 20 to 30. So you said, you know what? I'm going to now start at 30, but instead of putting in $50 a month, I can now do $100 a month. So I'm going to double up. For missing the last 10 years, I'm going to double up what I can put in. What would that look like at the time you retire at 65? Now, this is what's crazy to me. This is when we say time matters more than anything. If you were to do $100 a month to age 65, again, putting it in every single month from 30 to 65, 35 years, you would only have $343,000. And only is the wrong number. It's a great number to have, okay? But what we're saying is, look what 10 years did. You have to put in twice as much, and you have less than half.
Right.
Or right at half.
Right.
That to me is crazy. That's what we talk about when we say the last double is so very important. The last double is what gets chopped off if you wait. Not the first half, the last. So if you have, if we say, you know, rule of 72, it's a great number. You know, if you take 7.2%. Every 10 years, your money doubles. You flip it around, you get 10%. Every 7.2 years, your money doubles. Very easy math here, right? So we're going to go with getting 7.2. You put in 30, 30 becomes 60. 60 becomes 120. 120 becomes 240. 240 becomes 480. Do you see what we're saying about those last doubles being so important? If you don't get that money in to have that compounding, you don't get the last doubles. And the first ones aren't as important.
Right. And that's what we really, you know, you feel like sometimes you're shaking the person in front of you saying, you have to listen to this. This is such good news for you. If you get started now, you could be potentially be a millionaire in the future with just putting in $50 a month. I mean, just letting it grow. So getting started, putting that money in, it's just so huge. It's exciting. I mean, I feel like everybody should be excited about that.
We have a lot of times say it's an aha moment. And when you have an aha moment, it's one of those things where you say, this should blow your hair back. We used to joke when we were getting people started with us and working and saying, what makes you so excited? How do you put this across to people? And Dave told someone once, if you're not doing cartwheels, you're not getting this message. So that's what we say with aha moments. We just know that your life can be changed. Dean changed his nephew's life. He really, truly did. What he did for him by saying, put that money away and get started, his nephew will live like no one else. Like Ramsey says, sacrifice a little bit so you can live like no one else later. And he will, because of getting started.
And I really hope that nephew is sharing his story with his friends. I mean, just letting them know what he's doing and that they can do it too. I think back to my brother and my sister. I mean, they're younger. And if I can push them to get started, even though they might not understand the full financial world, it's okay. Just do what you can and get it put away.
And you don't have to understand everything. Sometimes certain minds have to analyze everything to death and make sure that all the pieces fit before they'll even start. Well, you don't have to do that much. You don't. You're not giving up your whole life into this investment that if you lose it all, you're going to lose your, you know, everything that you have. That's not what we're saying. Do your research. Find a good investment. Find someone to work with. Mm-hmm. And our job as financial advisors, first and foremost, is to educate people. And if you don't understand what you're doing, then you need to ask more questions. Questions are good. Questions are helpful. Makes us better.
Right. And we'll explain it 15 times in a row until it clicks. And draw pictures. Jennifer's great at drawing pictures.
You never know what they are later, but at the time they made a lot of sense. Because I'm not an artist, but I do. I draw pictures to make people understand. You know, this is a funnel. This is the reservoir. This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. And it helps. So if you're a visual person, tell them, you know what, I learned better by visual. Would you show me how you did that and what you're trying to explain? Maybe we'll come much clearer.
Yep.
All right. This is another thing to keep in mind. Inflation's real. Even if it's not high right now, 25 years from now, if you need $50,000 to live, it's going to cost $82 at 2% inflation. That's the same dollar. That to me is so important to think about, because what if inflation's at 3%? If it's at 3 in 25 years, your $50,000 needs to be $104 for you to live the same as you're living today. That's why we're saying get started, because if you can draw around 4%, and that's the standard rule of thumb. Other people believe slightly more, slightly less, but the standard rule of thumb is around 4% draw on your investments. That's $40,000 per million. So if you want $80,000 of income, you're going to need a couple million dollars. The only way you're going to get a couple million dollars if you start investing today and let that compounding that we've been talking about continue. Because when you look at inflation and you think, and it's fun to go back in history. And that's the one thing that's really cool about the internet now too. I mean, a lot of over information and whatever, but you can find anything. So when you sit there and you think, you know what, the average new car in 1970 was $3,400. It's 10 times that now. We looked, 34,000. Well, people need to start thinking about this when things cost more and more and more all the time. Put the money away today so that you can live well later. Help your kids out if you choose. Give if you choose. There's so many things that you can do if you have freedom. But freedom only comes if you're educated about what you're doing with your money. All right. We are going to take our last break of this hour, and we're going to go into a few other things that they're fun. It's kind of aging in place, stuff like that we've been talking about as well. So give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning, and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Much filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Please give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. You know, it's an interesting thing when you start to share stories, because we meet with a lot of people. We get a lot of different examples of life and how people choose to manage their finances and different things that are good and bad in every situation that we see. I would say every story, of course, is somewhat different. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. We had a couple appointments this week that really, I think, hit both Erica and I pretty heavily. One was people that didn't plan as well as they should have, and now they're in a life-changing situation where he was forced for an early retirement before they were prepared for it, or he would face a layoff. The hard part was everything was going along fine. They were living paycheck to paycheck, so in their minds, they weren't worried. They were having fun. They had a lot of stuff. But then when it came down to it, and you're losing a paycheck, so their income was cut probably by a third. Now they're saying that they'll be okay, is what they keep saying. We'll be okay. It's not hit them yet. There are aha moments on compounding. There are aha moments when you finally go, you know what? We've got to change our life. We can't continue to live this way. It's causing us stress. Stress is terrible for people. And money is one of the biggest stress causers I think there is. Mm-hmm. And most arguments are from it, trying to figure out how to get out of debt if you have it. Maybe not spending as much on fun things as their spouse would like to. There's so many things that tie back to money. But if you are living so close to not having anything because of choices, that has to at some point hit you and say, maybe I don't need a new truck that's $600 a month. Maybe I don't need an ATV. Maybe I don't need to take a trip. When I ask people when we're going through budgets and we see credit card debt, which if you think about the average interest rate, because we looked that up.
Yes.
Purchases were 19%. Mm-hmm. Cash transfers, 27%. Mm-hmm. That you can't pay that off. It's impossible to pay that off. Erica actually looked at $1,500, I think.
Yeah, it was $1,500, which you think about it, doesn't seem like that much. But if you're only making the minimum payment, that $25 a month, it would take you 9 years to pay it off. And that's not adding to credit cards. That's just keeping that $1,500. And over that 9 years, you're actually paying back almost $3,000. So how do people pay it? If you're adding to credit card debt, it's extremely hard to get it paid off. If you're saying, oh, well, I can buy this because I can make the minimum payment. Mm-hmm. Well, if you can make the minimum payment, it doesn't mean you should buy it. Just think about how much money you're literally throwing away mm-hmm. at something that maybe you didn't even need, or maybe it was more of a want than a need.
When someone bought a house a while ago, they told us a story that people wanted to own some of the furniture. So they negotiated that into the price of the home. And they said, I don't know, they paid like $1,000 for a hutch, right? People finance that $1,000 hutch instead of just saying, hey, I'll give you $1,000 for that, since they didn't have $1,000 to do so, for 30 years. How do we change that philosophy or that thought process of living in debt? Mm-hmm. So when we're going through financial plans and we ask a lot of questions, we don't just look at their assets and give them an allocation. We ask them, what did this credit card debt come from? Why did this get built up? Sometimes they'll actually tell us we've seen $30,000, $40,000 mm-hmm. in credit card debt. And they say, oh, it was vacation, or, you know, we had to add on to our house, or we needed a dream backyard, or something. It's always normally stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not a lot of times, you know, I had a medical emergency or something that was just unable to plan for. It was stuff.
And half the time people didn't even really know where it came from.
It just built up.
Yeah.
And then the comments of, well, we've been worse before. That's not a gold star thing. How do you go through life and just say, this is okay to live this way? What if instead you saved that $1,500 to buy whatever it was? Most people could put that away fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. And instead of paying $3,000 for something that you don't even remember what you bought, you actually save for it. And most of the time, if you save, it's not that important to you. At the moment, it seems like I can't live without whatever. But when you think about it, you save for it. It's never as important as it was at that spur of the moment. So credit cards should not be in your wallet if you're a spender. Mm-hmm. Just set them aside. Leave them home. I understand not wanting to put your debit card online. I get it. You don't want people to take your cash, and, you know, you usually get it back if there's fraud, but it makes a lot of people uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable. Right. But that doesn't mean that you build up credit card debt and never pay it off. Then on the reverse side, we have people that come in and they're so anti-debt that they've spent the first 25, 30 years of their working life paying off everything. Great. I mean, I'm never going to judge somebody on that. But your house is paid off. Your cars are paid off. All your stuff is paid off. And now you're ready to start investing. Time's gone.
Right. There has to be a balance between the debt payoff and investing. I mean, a lot of people feel like I can't do anything until my house is paid off. But that could be, you know, 20, 15, 20, 30 years takes people to pay off a home. So if you wait that long, I mean, we talked about the numbers. Waiting 10 years makes a huge difference. So there has to be that balance of, yes, you did a great job maybe getting your car paid off. You have no credit card debt. Maybe you just have your house left. But let's start thinking about retirement and how much we should be putting away, what we need to live off of in the future.
Mm-hmm. Can't get time back. That's right. The main thing. We ran a couple other numbers too when we were going back and saying, what if you waited until you were 40 to start investing and then you could put away $250 a month? Because you try to say, what if we waited? What if we did this? What if we do that? It always ends up the same. Starting earlier with lower money ends up with more. Erica ran a figure for someone that wanted to retire on $80,000 a year of income in 6 years.
Right. How do you make that work?
Yeah.
You would have to put away more than what they were bringing in income-wise, and that's not possible. So it's the time, and the gentleman I spoke with said, well, I just need to make more money. Well, it's not always that easy,
no,
right?
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go to the phones again. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Oh, no, this is Terry.
Oh, hey, Terry. How are you? Sorry.
Well, that's okay. If that's the worst thing that happens today, it's a pretty good day.
There you go. You always wanted to be a Steve, right?
No.
What can we help you with?
Basically, it comes down to, I was going to ask Erica about what kind of, and granted she's an exceptional individual and all, but during school, grade school, junior high school, what kind of training do kids get these days in money management and frugality and such?
Yeah, Terry, that's a great question, and it's absolutely nothing. I mean, there's nothing taught in school now, high school, middle school, college, unless you're specifying in that field. There's not a class on budgeting anymore. There's not a class on what a 401k is. So that's what Jennifer and I talk about all the time, is just educating people, because I mean, personally, I didn't know what a 401k was coming out of middle school, high school. You really have to do your own research. And the budget side of things is funny. You would think that's something that everybody should know how to do coming out of high school, because they're maybe launching into the real world. They're, you know, starting their own jobs and things. So the budget side is so important. So I think that's something that a lot of families don't like to talk about money. It's just not something that people are comfortable with. But I think it should be a huge part of how you raise your kids, or even just having right. little discussions about, you know, that shirt that you wanted, it cost $10, and this is what $10 is. And just talk about it and say, okay, there's chores that you need to do to buy this shirt, or just mm-hmm. learning, okay, well, you want two shirts. Well, you can only pick one. So even just those simple lessons, even when kids don't really understand what money is, I think bringing education into as young as you can get is really, really important. I mean,
when my grandson graduated high school, I gave him a grub steak after he showed me what he planned to have for his budget. He had to show me what his rent was, his utilities and whatnot. And,
yep.
And he's been real good. About a 20-year-old working for the fun of it. It's something he likes to do. But he won't go into debt now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is, you know, it was just a lesson that mm-hmm. he had to learn somewhere along the line.
It's important.
You know, it's interesting, Terry. Both my girls were at Rocky Mountain High School here in Meridian, and there was one class that they had, and I can't even remember what class it was, but he tried to make them understand this. He actually did a little town where they ran businesses and they had their own, you know, government. And he talked about Roth IRAs and things. So when they came home and told me that, instead of just playing the stock market game, which teaches kids to gamble, he was right. really, really, really trying to teach them, hey, this is what real life looks like. This is what it takes. Businesses would shut down. Businesses would start up. So he was really trying to give them some real world experience. I don't know how impactful it was, because I beat on my kids all the time that they need to invest. But I was very appreciative that he did try.
Well, it is part of Professor Petzo's run for city council. I think he ought to put that in his platform, to go out and volunteer to go to schools around the valley and yep. teach kids.
Yeah, he's worried that he'd be stuck on the pothole committee or the speed bump, and he's just not ready for that.
Well, yeah, but once he got his name out there, you know, teaching kids, all these kids would say, hey, he's a pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yep, he's talked about wanting to teach before. He does very much enjoy it.
Anyway, thank you, kids. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too,
Terry.
Bye.
Bye. All right. That was a good call. I mean, it is true. What is taught in school now? The stock market game. I remember when my older daughter came home and she said, "Mom, we're doing the stock market game. What stock should I pick? We're trying to beat each other out." And I know that gets them excited about at least what investing is, but it's not truly investing. And that's why we really want people to do more than just gamble. It's much more risky to pick a stock and hope it goes really high than it is to put money away and, you know, watch it grow slowly. People get wealthy by slow, steady growth, not by buying really high flyers and knowing when to sell. That's not as easy as anyone would think it would
be. Right.
But anyways, so this has been a wonderful show. I really have enjoyed going through these numbers, going back to trying to not barbell approach investing, of living life today and not planning for the future, or paying off all your debt and not planning for the future. We really want people to do a little bit of everything. Try to stay out of debt, live within your means, save. If you can put very easy budgeting rule, you probably heard Dave talk about it. We talk about it too. 70-20-10 is a very easy way to budget. Live on 70% of your income. Put 20% away in a put and take, because you know what? Christmas happens every year. You want to take that vacation.
Birthdays.
Things break. I mean, Erica was driving in this morning and a girl's car tire blew out in front of her.
Yep.
Got to buy a new tire. Where is that going to come from? This is part of life. These are not emergencies. They're expected. Things will break all the time. And then 10% of your money is not your money. 10% of that money is put away for your long-term future. If you did something as easy as that, you would be wealthy. Just live within what you make and not so much in getting everything today. If you have a baby, right off the bat, open an ideal plan with the state of Idaho. It's a 529 educational account. Put $25 a month away. Do that for 18 years. Tell a grandparent, you know what, instead of buying them their 100th toy, put $25 in that account for them. Do these little small things. And if the average student loan debt is $30,000 today, don't know what it'll be 18 years from now, but if you start putting something away, you can make a big dent in that. Mm-hmm. And now they actually will starting to allow 529 plans to pay towards student loans.
Right.
That's a huge thing as well. So if you can do this, set it aside, maybe make your kids work a little bit towards it, decide what, instead of making it as much of an experience as it is an actual education. So maybe finding a school that matches what they want to do and be, because that's important. You're going to do it for a long time. But make sure that you're not overpaying for that education. Because if you want to be a nurse and it's $60,000 a year at the school you want to go to versus 20 here, that's a big debt load difference. So just look at what you're wanting and how you want to live the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. All right. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been a fun morning.
It's going to be a warm, sunny day out there. So try not to get burnt and enjoy your weekend. And Dave will be back next week. If you have questions for us during the week and we haven't answered them here, please feel free to give us a call. Again, our office is there. Look us up at petsofinancial.com and give us a call anytime. Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend.